Welcome back to another episode of My Neighbors Are Dead. I'm your host, Adam Peacock, and we're all familiar with the big names in horror. Freddy, Jason, the Muha dolls from Zombies Ate My Neighbors. But who we're not familiar with are the ones just outside the terror, the ones who didn't get to tell their tales. And helping me do that this week, the co-host of the KingCast on the Fangoria Network, Mr. Scott Wampler. How are you, buddy?
Living the dream. How are you doing today?
I'm so good. First off, thank you for being so understanding about a potential plumber showing up at my apartment.
No, I'm into it. I like where this is going to go. Thank you for having me. I'm a big fan of the show.
Oh, buddy, I'm so excited to do this with you. If I'm distracted, Scott, I literally just got inundated with a bunch of news networks that apparently Ross and Rachel are dating in real life.
Oh, no. I don't have an opinion on that.
I don't either, but it's everywhere.
I couldn't even tell you which ones Ross and Rachel are. I didn't watch Friends when it was on.
I was a sucker. I did it.
I have a thing with sitcoms and laugh tracks, you know? It weirds me out. So it's very, very, very difficult for me to watch anything that's like that.
I'm a mark, man. I suck.
I'm not one of those people that's like, fuck Friends. Like, it's just not for me.
I mean, from one scary thing to another, you are the co-host of the KingCast on the Fangoria Network. But before that, we were talking a little bit about it before. You were the managing editor of Birth Movies Death.
That is correct.
I love that site. Way back when started by Devin Fracci, correct? When he was at Chud, I was reading his stuff at Chud.
Mm-hmm.
I love that site. What was your journey there? What was that like for you?
I started out. You got to rewind quite a bit, like where I was fucking around with stand up in the Dallas area. Mm-hmm. And I loved the process of writing material and performing it. But I didn't really care for the whole community around it. Very sure, cutthroat, yeah. very political. I just didn't really enjoy that. And also I was at best like slightly above average at that job, you know, but around that time I got hired by like a content farm, which is not a hard thing to do, by the way, to write for them. And from there I got noticed and picked up by Collider, and I worked for them for several years. And around that time, Meredith Borders, who's since become a very close friend of mine, she was one of the co-founders over at what was then Badass Digest, and asked me to come in and be a contributing writer. And I basically jumped ship from Collider to come over to Birth Movies Death. And I was a contributing writer there for many years. And then Devin, as most people know, if they know anything about Devin, left that site. Around 2016, under not great circumstances. And over the course of several years, I went from being the news editor to the managing editor. And now I am the former managing editor at Birth Movies Set. That site did not survive a number of wonky things that happened right there at the tail end. And so... Mm-hmm. And it was around that time that we launched the KingCast, which we figured would do well enough given my co-host Eric Vespi and I's time spent in the blogging mines. You know, we had our own readerships and followers and what have you. But it really took off. It took off in a way that we didn't expect. And so now that's my full-time job, and it's great.
To borrow a thing from you, when you ask your guests their connection to King or their inspiration with King, what was yours, not just with Stephen King, but with horror?
Well, horror, I was always a morbid kid. I think I've told this story somewhere else before, but, you know, I was drawing monsters from a very little age. I was fascinated with, you know, scary shit and creatures and stuff like that. And
yeah,
once got thrown out of a Sunday school class for they assigned us to draw a picture of Jesus. What did we think Jesus looked like? And I was like, I don't know. And drew Frankenstein instead, which did not please the Sunday school teacher. who kept me after. And
I was gonna say, you had to get in trouble for that, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. They went directly to my parents, and my parents were just kind of like, he's look, the kid's morbid. We don't know what to tell you. All right. He's not drawing a connection here between, you know, the resurrection of Jesus and the resurrection of Frankenstein's monster. He just doesn't know better.
Scott, I'm sorry to sound like an idiot, but I can never remember Sunday school. Is that the same as catechism?
No, I was, that's Catholic. Okay. I was raised some nebulous form of Christian.
Okay. Cause I did catechism. I don't know what I honestly didn't know if that was Sunday school or not, but
it's like you go to church and then you sit in a room and then a guy in like a backwards baseball cap, you know, gives you the straight dope on what Jesus was like. Cool. That's what it's like. And you know, that sort of thing.
I would have preferred that over the really mean old nun that we had running around.
I would have been alarmed to deal with nuns at that age.
She was mean and she like spit coffee on people. It was really gross.
For real?
Because she didn't mean to. It was just she would pound coffee. And then when she would yell at you for doing something, my friends Robert and Miguel were in class with me and we always got in trouble because we liked to goof off. And when she would yell, it just would cover our papers with coffee.
Well, that's fantastic.
it was gross.
Yeah, macing you with coffee breath. not into that.
Yeah.
But my mother was a big Stephen King reader, and she often had the books lying around the house. And like so many of the guests we've had on the show, I was captivated at a very early age by the covers. Covers of Stephen King books used to be a bit more elaborate and painterly than they are now. And I found them very compelling because they were always creepy in some way. You know, the cover for the hardcover original version of It, you know, with the hand reaching out of the gutter was great. Or Misery. It's like a dude in a wheelchair and there's a shadow of one with an axe falling over him. And, you know, I want to be a part of that world. You know what I'm saying? And so I started reading King at a very early age. I got in trouble at school for reading King when I the teacher deemed me too young to be doing so. And my folks were like, he's fucking reading. You know, what do you want?
Isn't that the point of all this?
Yeah. Let the kid read. And that started a lifelong love affair that, you know, continues to this day. And my teachers used to give me a lot of shit about it when I was a kid. You know, you don't want to be reading that. You want to be reading a separate piece or some nonsense, like some boring ass, you know, thing like this. And you'll never amount to anything with your nose stuck That's in a insane. Stephen King book. Well, fuck you, man. I got a successful podcast now. So, you know, who won that one?
That story's never fucking ended where somebody was like, yeah, they were right. Like nobody ever said like, yeah, you're never going to make it playing baseball. Like there's never a guy who's like a used car dealer's like, yeah, they were right. I fucking sucked at baseball.
Some guy working at an Arby's somewhere is just like, I was the funniest motherfucker in fourth grade. And they told me I'd never amount to anything, but guess who's up for manager next month?
You know?
Yeah.
It's that whole part of teachers that like, they just want to stomp the fucking light out of your eyes.
Mm-hmm. And I married a teacher, oddly enough.
Did you?
Yeah, I did not get along with my teachers at any point during any stage of my school career. I was a troublemaker and a class clown.
So was I.
But I married one, and she has otherworldly amount of patience to deal
what
with.
What does she teach?
She's a sped teacher. She heads up the sped department of the local high school, which is like special education for special needs students. So when I say a superhuman amount of patience, I really mean it. She has a rough job, and it's something that in no way could I ever do.
That's like a real teacher. That's not like some like bullshit civics teacher who was just like, I wanted to be a lawyer, but I had to do this instead.
What do you do? I teach social studies.
Right. Come on.
And that's not to denigrate the social studies teachers in the audience.
No, they're all great. If you're listening to the show, we love social studies.
Love it. Teacher of the year. she's a machine. And what she's dealt with over the past year or two, and again, right now, because we live in Texas, is It's astounding. If I were her, I would have burned the building down months and months and months ago. It's just a testament to how seriously she takes the gig and how committed she is to it. So I respect the hell out of that.
I have several teacher friends who, whenever I talk to them and I ask how it's going, it's usually met with this response of like, it's fine. You know, like just whatever. Yeah.
We don't have that problem in my household. It's like, how is work? And then 90 minutes later, that conversation will wrap up. Man. Like it's a constant thing that she's dealing with.
Please send our love and appreciation to your lovely wife.
Yes, we will. I will.
Does she share your love of horror or of King?
Oh yeah, she's a big horror fan, and she will watch like I'm a big trash connoisseur. I'm a big believer in what I call ill-advised cinema, which is slightly different from just straight up bad movies. But she will. You know, there's that ritual every night of like, what are we going to watch? And then you go through all the streaming services and you flip through each one for, you know, 45 minutes trying to find something you haven't seen before. She'll just pick the first thing. You know, she'll go off the thumbnail. That's all she needs. And I'm like, no, we're not. And she'll be like, it just came out last year. It's not like an old thing. And I'm like, if it came out last year, babe, I would have heard about it. I live online This is my job, basically. to know about these things, you know, it didn't, a gem didn't escape my attention. This is, you know, this has got a C. Thomas Howell in it. So she'll watch just about any horror movie. She's a big fan of that genre. King, she wasn't into so much when we got married. She had tried reading a King book when she was much younger. She was raised in a very conservative religious household and, very different upbringing than I had and was like offended by whichever book it was that she tried to read. And, I've tried to figure out which book she's talking about, but I haven't been able to get any cogent details out of her, on that front. But now she reads some of the King books and likes some, doesn't like others. I was mortified to discover that she was more of a Koontz girl. Which, you know, was almost very nearly a deal breaker, but, you know, love won in the end, I guess.
Oh, Dean. Yeah. If you can overcome Dean, you can overcome anything.
the king of the airport novel.
I mean, God bless him. Yeah. So the movie we're talking about today, It Chapter One, and you had mentioned the cover of the book, and that's certainly a cover that sticks out with me. Do you remember your first experience with It, whether the book, the miniseries, the new one? Like, what was your first experience with It?
My very, very first experience was my mother was reading the hardcover, and my family had a lake house when I was a kid, and we would have to take these hour-long drives there and back. And one time coming back, that book was in the back of the car with me while we were driving, and I just picked up the book and flipped it open randomly to a page. The first word on that page was fuck. And as I'm looking at this, my mom like whipped around from the front seat and was like, no, you don't need to be looking at that, you know, and was like trying to get it out of my hands. You know, my dad's driving like, what the fuck is going on? You know, and she's like, he really does not need to be looking at that book, you know? And I'm just like, phew, like lasered in on the word fuck at the top of that page, like, oh, one of the forbidden words. And that was my very first encounter with the book. And then some years later, there was the mini series, which was a huge deal for 90s kids. You know, I was maybe 9 or 10 when that came out. And, you know, everyone watched that shit. You know, those big event series were a big deal on network TV back in the day. And it was terrifying, but I couldn't look away.
I mean, same thing. You know, we had I've talked about it before, but a neighbor kid that I lived next to, his name was Rusty, and we had a sleepover at Rusty's, and that was the thing. Like the night was leading up to watching the first VHS, you know, tape of Stephen King's It.
Yeah,
it was an event, man. It was like, you know, and I think other people have talked about it on here too, where like you pretend leading up to it that you're not scared, but deep down, you know, you're shitting your pants.
Yeah. At the sleepover, everyone's like, you know, it's not scary, but we should do something else, guys, right? Right. You know, like yeah, this is boring. Yeah. It's not even scary. You know, and meanwhile, everyone's pants have long since been wet. Yeah, I know that feeling very well.
There's a particular house in this book and in this story, the house on Niebold Street, which is an objectively terrifying place.
Yes.
You read about it or you look at it. Did you have anything like that, Scott, on your street growing up? We had a place around me called the Reflector House, which I think I've talked about on here before, but that was like, it wasn't on our street, but it was in the area that was supposedly haunted. A guy had apparently butchered his wife and children. And then it went to the madhouse, and then this guy's brother and his nephew moved in. The house had been haunted, so people put up a bunch of reflectors around the house to keep people away. That was our local haunt. Did you?
What
have anything
the
like
fuck
that
is
you?
That? Is that story true?
I don't know if it's true. I think what happened was people were driving around the house, and they put reflectors up to get people to stop going down the street. It was a little cul-de-sac, little dead end street. Now I will say this, Scott. I did go there. I went there once with a buddy who he had driven his Jeep down the road, and somebody, one of the other neighbors, because there were several houses lining the street as you make your way down to the Reflector House. But somebody had thrown a log with nails in it underneath his tires, because the rumor is what we told ourselves, we're going to get murdered. What probably actually happened was it's probably just a bunch of really nice people living on a street who just got sick of people driving down the road. And a bunch
of they got tired of your shit. Totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally.
So was there anything like that for you?
No. I grew up in the suburbs of Dallas. Very, you know, McMansion-y, very white bread. We didn't have any dilapidated houses where I lived or anything that might be remotely scary. But what we did have was I lived in like a housing development neighborhood where a large creek ran up the side of it. In fact, I think the development was called Forest Creek in Plano, Texas. And down near the creek, they had these huge sewer tunnels, you know, just like in It, like big enough for you to walk straight into, no problem, and still have room to like reach up to the ceiling. You know, we were kids, we were like 7, 8 years old, and we would go down there with flashlights and fuck around in there. And eventually we realized like you could crawl up the side tunnels and actually emerge into the gutters that were on the main street. And so it was only a matter of time before we like were crawling up in there and then throwing like eggs and shit at cars out of the gutters or rocks at people, you know, just being total assholes. And that experience was always scary. One of the pipes in that area was notorious as being, you know, a place where, you know, no good Nick teens would come down there and sacrifice cats or whatever for Satan, and spray painted above the pipe. It said like, it was like Satan's Pass or Satan's Tunnel or something like that. Maybe someone
we
in Plano
had one of those too.
Will remember. For real?
Yeah, we had like in the little, like really little grown up behind the townhouses my mom and I lived in was a field. And there were some woods back there that was affectionately called the Humps, I think because there was a hill in there. So stupid kids started calling it the Humps. But same thing. There was the rumor that like, that's where teens go to worship the devil and they kill animals back there. And I think because somebody stumbled across like a piece of shitty carpet with some beer bottles where teens went to go drink, it became a place where, you know, the blackest of evil lives.
These American myths. I wonder if you, you also are then familiar with the phenomena of what we called like woods porn or forest porn. Occasionally you would find these stashes of like nudie mags, like down by the creek or in these tunnels.
Yeah.
And it was clearly someone just stashing their fucking, you know, hustlers and shit. But, woods porn.
Yeah. We had a tree. Yeah. We had a tree by the baseball field where we, would, we never, Scott, I don't think we ever got a magazine. I think I think we only ever came across like one or two pages that, now that I think about it, one of my shithead friends probably just stole from their house and then brought out, and we just looked at it in the baseball field.
Oh, there was no mistake that this wasn't something anyone I knew was originating. But I've always been fascinated by that. And I've got a friend that lives like way up north, like up in Massachusetts. And he brought this up one day, and he's like, and sometimes we would go in the woods and we would find all this porn. I was like, what the fuck? I thought that was like a very specific thing to whatever was going on in my neighborhood. There's like some put upon husband, you know, that can't hide his Playboys under a mattress. So he's coming down there. Yeah.
And kids keep killing my pornos.
So, yeah, the late 80s, early 90s, apparently a lot of this kind of stuff going on.
What a time to be a kid.
Yeah, it was. It was great, you know. I think I had a blast back then. I don't know that I would enjoy as much being a kid now. The world seems a more dangerous place. And less fun in general. Yeah.
You certainly had to use your imagination more. Like, it was more of an accomplishment, I think, to find woods porn than it would be to just look at anything up on Pornhub.
Yeah. In my day, we had to hike down to the creek to see bush. Yeah.
Well, I would love talking about woods bush more, Scott. I wish we had more time to talk about it, but unfortunately, we have to take a break because, they say every town has an Elm Street and every place might have a house on Niebold Street. We're going to talk to a realtor, Jeremy S. Blumpkins. But Scott, I appreciate you coming by, man. This was so fun.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Please come by and do it again.
Of course.
We'll be right back. Hey neighbors, Adam here. Have you been enjoying My Neighbors Are Dead? Well, there are two quick and easy ways you can show your support that only take a second. First, leave us a rating and review in your podcast player of choice. That can be anything from talking about a recent episode to suggesting a film for a future guest. And two, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss future episodes. It helps you, it helps us, and it helps new folks find the podcast. Thanks, and now back to the show. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am joined, this week, this is kind of a big deal for me. I am joined by somebody who could be considered at one time in my life to be an enemy. I am talking to Jeremy S. Blumpkins, the day shift manager at Olive Garden. Jeremy, how are you, my friend?
Oh, doing great. How are you?
I'm good. I only say that because I was a server and a bartender at Carrabba's, and
we got a little rivalry with the Carrabba's boys. Yeah,
boy, the one we worked at, we were right across the street, Jeremy, and it would get pretty heated. I don't mind telling you.
You know, here's the thing. You know, here in the family, we respect Carrabba's. We don't respect Macaroni Grill. You know, y'all are a worthy opponent. I will say that. Yeah. But those Macaroni Grill chumps, you know, I'm not even giving them the time of day.
See, and that's what this show's about. I want to bring people together. And I think what a nice moment for us to kind of come together and both agree that Macaroni Grill sucks shit.
It does. It really does. I don't know what they're doing with the bread over there. You know, people don't want this. It's disgusting.
Now, as somebody who worked in the Italian chain food restaurant business, I know that sometimes, you know, money can be a little tight, a little sparse. So you kind of ventured off. You do what so many people in the business and in other industries do. You ventured off and you decided you were going to become you were going to get into real estate, in a manner of speaking. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, well, my wife talked me into this. You know, she watches the reality shows. And, you know, I don't have time for those. I'm usually on shift at the garden. But when I come home, she was, you know, there was a 6-month period where every night she was talking about house flipping and let's get into house flipping. And what about house flipping? And, you know, finally, mostly just to, you know, stop having this conversation, I decided to invest in a little money and let her pick the property. And we picked up a place on the other side of town, not a good neighborhood, but we were hoping that, you know, here in Derry that, you know, they would build out that part of town, you know, maybe there's a mall going to go in over there or, you know, something like a high traffic area. So we picked up this place And it is, I gotta tell you, it's been nothing but a problem ever since. And you know, it's a unnecessary stressor in the life of an Olive Garden manager. You know, I got enough to deal with as it is.
Well, yeah, certainly. I can only imagine. And I want to say, I admire your motivation to try to, you know, strike out it and really make it on your own, doing your own thing, because I think not only does it say just what a good person you are, but it also just lets people know that no way that guy works at Macaroni Grill. He's too smart. He's got to ship too much together.
That is absolutely true. The Macaroni Grill guys, they're not flipping houses. They're not building empires, you know?
No, not at all.
They've given up, frankly.
Yeah. They can barely find their way in through the front door.
Totally.
So you and your wife, 6 months of having this conversation, you decide we're going to do it. And you end up investing, I guess, and taking on this project of the house on Niebold Street. Again, I don't know. I don't think you need to know much about it. When you just look at it, you're like, wow, that seems like that's a real fixer upper. That seems like a big undertaking. Why was that the first property you decided to go with?
Well, we were mostly buying the property, not so much the house. You know, like I said, we were hoping that they would put in a mall over there, maybe a Galleria, something like that. But it doesn't seem like the local governance in Derry has any interest in that. We were happy to just wipe that building right off the face of the earth. But, you know, things didn't turn out that way. We got stuck with the property. And, you know, about 6 months after that, my wife left me. And I'm still holding the bag over here because I'm the one that signed for it. But, it really wouldn't be so bad because A, I've still got a little hope that they're going to build up the area. But sure. B, I was able to find some tenants. The previous tenants didn't work out, but as it turns out, they were, it was a frat house. And,
I was going to say, you were saying, yeah, your first clients were a fraternity, which, you know, might seem to somebody like gut reaction to like a bad idea. I think it's a good idea. I mean,
well, it seemed a good idea. You know, I'm a fun time guy. You know, we're doing a new promotion at the garden right now called Mangia Bofa, which is Italian for sausage fest. And all summer long, people can come in and it's all the sausage you can eat. That was my idea. You know, I'm angling for general manager over here. So I'm trying to be as innovative as I can be. It's
a good idea.
I don't think that's going to pan out. People have not responded well to the name of the thing, nor the process of the sausage delivery. But, you know, in trying to think creatively about the house and being that kind of guy that has fun ideas, I thought a frat house would be great. But the thing is that the property came standard with a leper who lives on the property. And the thing about lepers is they don't have anywhere else to go.
Sure,
and, you know, so I found myself in a position of playing landlord, not only to this leper, but also the frat house that was living there. And they did not get along at all. It was just constant headaches. You know, the frat couldn't bring ladies over there because, you know, the leper was scaring them off and the frat boys were drinking too late, which was keeping the leper under the porch awake. He didn't like that. He's down there trying to have his little Boone's farm at the end of the night. You know, he doesn't want to be, you know, disturbed. So
I think anybody listening can relate to that.
Yeah, of course. We've all been there.
Oh God. Yeah, absolutely.
And it just, it wasn't a good pairing. Me and the Delta Kappa Kappa guys.
I want to double back real quick. Just something that you had brought up about this promotion you were trying to run at Olive Garden. When you said that didn't go great, Jeremy, I got so mad because I've seen, as a part of, you know, the Carrabba's family, I had seen so many people that I worked with pitch ideas, much like Sausage Fest, where I thought that's a great idea. And then the company doesn't invest in it or people find something silly, like the name is wrong. So I don't want you to, I don't think you do, but I don't want you to feel bad about that idea because that's a great idea. I think
it's a great idea.
It's a catchy name. But you had mentioned the method of sausage delivery. Talk me through that, because what was the big uproar with that? Because that seems like something that would be enjoyable for the whole family.
Well, you've been to Olive Garden. You've gotten a side of Alfredo to dip your breadsticks in, right?
Absolutely.
It's what we call a boat. And a little ceramic boat that mm-hmm. your sauce comes in. Sausage Vest is very cut and dried. There's not a lot of bells and whistles to it. You know, when our waiters, our servers are taking your order, if you say, give me the Sausage Fest, what they're going to do is they're going to deliver one boat full of sausage after another to your table. And each boat has four sausages in them. They're not seasoned. They are, there's no accompaniments. There's no pasta. You don't even get the salad and the breadsticks with this. It's just four straight up sausages boiled back in the kitchen, brought to your table, and we encourage people to eat them with their bare hands. That's an old Italian tradition.
Sure.
Well, people were getting grease on their hands. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of after church families that come in here, and it turns out that white suits are not conducive to sausage grease all over your palms. People were offended at the sight of boats full of sausage on their tables and felt like it was some of the feedback we got was unappealing or unattractive, or my children are frightened. You know, the standard complaints we have with any new menu item rollout. But this was really above and beyond. And to loop back around to something you were saying a minute ago about the company not maybe putting its full weight behind it. You know, they were really into this. We got a 15 by 50 foot banner that ran up the side of the building, and we're all along a highway, and it said, we're having a sausage fest and you're invited. And, you know, I feel like they would not have printed those banners if they weren't committed to the concept. This was really a failure on the part of our guests.
Well, you know, that's great to hear that you had the support of management, because so often, you know, I've seen it not go that way. And then, I don't know, Jeremy, I'm curious, because, you know, I'm sure you must have served before you became a manager, and Lord, that's what I did. And it makes me mad, because I think with that position comes just an inherent hatred of the clientele, and it's because of things like this.
Well, I think that's fair to say, and particularly here in Derry, we have a problem with the townspeople. They're often very aggressive or violent or bitterly racist or homophobic or what you might call a little abusive-y to their family members. So the clientele we're working with as it is, not necessarily ideal in terms of, you know, people you'd want to hang out with. But this is definitely their failure. I lay this at their feet for sure.
As well, you should. I don't think anybody in any restaurant capacity should ever lay blame at their own feet. I always blame the clientele if you get the chance.
Right.
So the clientele in town, the clientele in Derry, I imagine that these frat boys and this leper are a part of that clientele. So you're sort of stuck with these people in your house. Do you have any legal recourse? Because there's sort of like a civil war going on inside your property between a fraternity and a leper, a porch leper. Do you have any sort of legal recourse to make this thing settled? Can you kick them out? What do you do?
No, the situation between me and the Delta Kappa Kappa boys never really came to a head. That came with the latest client. The boys moved out on their own. You know, they just got tired of this. I could not provide them with enough coupons to smooth things over. And they eventually they abandoned the building, frankly. And so after moving all that stuff out of there, and keep in mind, at this time, I'm still, as you pointed out a moment ago, I was still waiting tables at the Garden.
Sure.
I hadn't yet been promoted to my current position. It was around that time, which coincided with my wife leaving me, that I was contacted in the middle of the night by a interdimensional, what I guess you could call it, an interdimensional murder clown. okay. by the name of Pennywise the Dancing Clown.
Of course.
And his offer was, I'll sign a contract with you, an open-ended contract right now, to take residence in this place. I'm going to use it for my own purposes. And in exchange, I will give you whatever your heart desires. You know, it was clear that I was entering into what you might call a pact with the devil, or a garden variety, dark agreement.
It's so hard to see at the time, though, you know?
It is, and also I really wanted that promotion. So he got me promoted at the garden, came that front of house manager. Very exciting stuff. You know, great. Then we get into the sausage fest business, which was supposed to be my next step up. That hasn't panned out yet, but it's besides the point, because what the point being that Pennywise, it turns out, is an even worse tenant than the Delta Kappa Cap boys were.
Sure. I mean, interdimensional
murder clown.
Murder clown seems.
Yeah,
like,
he does a lot of murders. A lot of murders, this guy.
Yeah. I can't even begin to wrap my head around what that must do to your psyche as somebody who's just trying to get into the renting business. You know, you're just trying to do better for yourself.
I'm gonna be honest. It doesn't really have a bearing on my psyche. I got enough shit going on down at the store, you know. I don't have time to worry about, you know, the child murders in the area or, the detritus that Pennywise and his victims are leaving in the house.
That's great.
Well, I say that, but it has been a problem over time. And there have been some complaints from the neighbors about, constant screaming. Mm-hmm. We had a really unfortunate incident a couple of weeks ago where a leg was found dangling out of the mailbox.
Oh, wow.
But on the upside, it turns out the leper and the clown get along great. They don't even fuck with each other, you know?
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be some kind of silver lining, right? You don't have to deal with those headaches.
Yeah, it's nice. But I'll tell you, every time I come over to, check on the property, the clown, he's big on balloons. And every time I come over there, it's like someone had a fucking water balloon fight out in the yard. You know, these balloons are just everywhere, broken.
Yeah.
Real big mess. So I got to pick all of those up. And then on the few occasions that I had ventured into the house, it's clear that he is not maintaining the upkeep of the property. And he also... I'm sorry to say, at some point, without my express permission, installed an open sewer tunnel in the basement, which is a smell factor that has sort of entered the picture that has also bothered the neighbors in the area.
I'm not in the real estate renting, landlord game, but have mm-hmm. you ever thought, Jeremy, of just maybe has the thought ever crossed your mind of, I'm going to cut my losses. I'm just going to give Pennywise the property. That way I can be done with it. And I'm still sitting on a nice chunk of change. Is that ever?
Well, I'm not a quitter, I'm not some loser, that's about to throw in the towel just because Fest didn't work out, just because there's an interdimensional murder clown taking up residence in my house. And mm-hmm. there came a point, we're now 16 years into this thing, I should point out. But there came a point pretty early on where a number of neighborhood children apparently banded together to rise up and rid the town of the clown's presence. And things got a little hairy there for a while, they were constantly leaving their bikes all over the sidewalk whenever they would come over to do battle with him,
which is rude,
destroying appliances, breaking windows, terrorizing the leper. It was just a fucking circus over there, and they eventually somehow or another defeated him. And I, at that point, I went to the bank and I said, look, you know, the clown is out of here. He's out of the picture. And they pointed out that, as I said earlier, you know, it's an open-ended contract. Until we have proof of death, until we have the body of the clown, there's not much we can do for you. You're locked into this contract.
Right.
Then I come to find out through some ancient text that a friend lent me, that he works on a 27-year life cycle. So this clown, you know, he'll pop up, he'll terrorize people as he was terrorizing these kids, I guess. And then he lays dormant for 27 years. And so as far as I understand it, and according to the lawyers, I got to wait this thing out until he comes back out of hibernation. And then I can maybe try to reason with him to get out of, you know, to try to either renegotiate the contract or get out of, you know, the current arrangement completely.
So you're just sitting on this thing for almost three decades. What do you do with that, Jeremy? What do you, I mean, because that's not a great spot to leave you in. You know, you're sort of left holding the bag. So what do you do with this property?
Well, I encourage the house on Ebolt Street has become something of a tourist attraction here in Derry. You know, people know that these murders happened here, that we had a clown in the area getting up to some murder business. What I have done is tried to encourage Stanley, that's the leper, to conduct tours in the house and you know, show off the history of Derry a little bit, show off the history of Pennywise. This would seem to be a thing that people would be interested in learning about, that they might be, you know, maybe they want a little fucking culture in their lives for once.
Yeah.
Turns out, not so much. It's sausage fest all over again with this.
I know, you know, you're not supposed to, I know I said blame the clients earlier. You're never supposed to blame the clients, but I blame them here too. I think people just don't want to be, if it's not directly in front of them, people don't want to learn. People don't want to reach out and, you know, educate themselves and add a little culture to their lives.
It's the same wherever you go, whether it be the garden, whether it be the house on Ebolt Street or any other position you can, imagine. If you're in a position of power, you're a manager, you're in charge. You're a big boy. Your underlings are your customers, the people that are serving you or working for you, are just constantly failing you. And that's something that I've had to grapple with, not only while I've been still working through my feelings regarding the divorce, which finally finalized just last year.
Seem to be doing very well, Jeremy. I don't know if that's...
Well,
that's...
I'm not. You know, I'm just... I'm not, but I think I'm gonna make it through this. You know, we've got 11 more years, and I can have that conversation with Pennywise, and you know, I that gives me plenty of time to work up what I want to say to him, draw up new contracts, and hopefully the leper will be dead by then. You know, so that'll be at least that taken care of.
Well, I mean, you seem to have a knack for business, and you have that, for lack of a better term, just like cutthroat mentality of like, these are the things we need to do. And I really admire that in you, because I don't have that. I don't have that, but I hope you don't, you know, you have some time to kill before Pennywise shows back up. So I hope you're not shutting yourself off to the prospect of love too.
Oh, I don't have time for dating, you know, that sort of stuff. It's the life of an Olive Garden manager / house flipper / friend of a leper is very busy. There's a lot of things to attend to. And the idea of introducing romance into that equation is just, you know, my plate's already full. So maybe one day that'll work out, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, I think I really enjoy talking with you. I think you're really smart. You seem to have just that, like I said, that killer instinct for that. So I hope at some point when things slow down, you find a little bit of that happiness.
Yeah, me too. Just not a priority right now.
Well, if you're in Derry and, you know, if you're in the next 11 years, you want to get a little bit of culture in life, go to the house on Ebolt Street. Look for Jeremy S. Blumpkins. That's important, right? You wanted me to hit that, right, Jeremy? Jeremy S.
Well,
Blumpkins.
Our GM at the store is Jeremy A. Blumpkins. And so people kept saying, you know, I'm looking for Jeremy, you know, servers needing something comped. And then they would, people would say, well, which Jeremy is it? And they'd say, you know, Blumpkins. And then, you know, now there's two Jeremy Blumpkins in the building. So now there's Jeremy A and Jeremy S.
And the wheels have come off at this point. Like,
yes. Yeah. It's a disaster.
I worked with a manager named Mike and Drew, and we couldn't figure that out. So I can't imagine having two guys with the same name, what that must do to a place of business.
And we're not even related. That's weird.
That is weird.
Apparently the Blumpkins family tree runs deep here in Derry.
Well, I would love to come back and talk a little bit of, you know, ancestral history here with you.
Sure.
I want to know more about some specials you got going on, because I think the people of Derry are lucky to have you, not only as somebody with a cultural institution where people can learn, but also the Olive Garden, where you can go and you can get a goddamn good meal.
Yes, please do. We've spruced up the tour of Italy. You know, when you go on the tour, you know, you're always in for a good time. But now we have we've thrown a little zhuzh on there. I don't want to spoil any surprises.
No, don't let make them come and see it. Make them come and earn it.
Yeah.
Well, Jeremy S. Blumpkins, you're a delight. I wish nothing but the best for you, and best of luck in the next 11 years.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks for coming by.
Of course.
Thank you so much for listening to My Neighbors Are Dead. I've been your host, Adam Peacock. The show is produced by myself with Nate DeFort and edited by Nate DeFort. Original music was done by Jesse Case, along with Dane Halverson, and our original artwork was done by Mark Nishan. I'd like to thank Scott Wampler for coming by again and playing Jeremy S. Blumpkins and talking about the Olive Garden and talking about real estate and what it takes to rent to people. And also to all of our listeners out there, if you work at the Macaroni Grill, we love you. We were just kidding. We got an Olive Garden guy. We got a Carrabba guy. We were just kidding around. If you want to know more about Scott, you can check him out. Again, he is the co-host of the KingCast on the Fangoria Network. Find that wherever you get your podcasts and follow him on Twitter. He is at Scott Wampler BMD. If you like the show and you want to support us, please like and subscribe. And if you'd like to donate to the show, you can find us on patreon.com at My Neighbors Are Dead. Follow us on Instagram at My Neighbors Are Dead and on Twitter at My Dead Neighbors. Again, thank you so much for listening to the show, and we'll see you next week.
Comics.
Do you like comic books?
Do you like brothers?
Do you like brothers talking about comic books?
Then this is the podcast for you. Screw it. We're just going to talk about comics.
Will Hines and Kevin Hines, performers from the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater and actual brothers, talk about actual comic books they love, like Spider-Man, The Fantastic Four, and many more.
If you prefer your podcast to be about fictional people talking about fictional books, this isn't it. But otherwise...
Screw it. We're just going to talk about comics from Campfire Media.
Campfire.